I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. We've been Disney fans our entire lives. And now, as childless adults, we're undertaking a journey through the media that shaped our lives.
Trying to find out if what made them special is still there.
We are Rewatching the Magic.
May the 4th be with you, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday, and also with you.
I was expecting that. Catholic upbringings, right?
No. Very much not. But I am smart and know things.
Ah. So, as you might have guessed, today we're talking about Star Wars. Give me those Star Wars. Nothing but Star Wars. Don't let them end.
Please don't sing. Yes. We have few enough listeners as it is. We don't want to drive anybody away.
Well, Bill Murray, when he's saying that, was right. Star Wars didn't end.
Weird Al was right when he said that Mark Hamill would be playing that part till he's old and gray, because... Yep.
We are talking about the original Star Wars movie, more likely known today as Episode 4, A New Hope. But when it came out, it was just Star Wars.
The one and only.
No Episode 4, no New Hope. It was the one and done movie because Lucas thought it was going to be one and done.
Well, I think everybody else thought it was going to be one and done. Given what we know about the history of the making of the movie, I don't think Lucas thought it was going to be one and done.
I mean, I've heard a lot of stories about this movie. Like, pretty much what he wanted his original trilogy to be, he cut it down for that original movie.
Yeah, but the biggest thing that suggests that Lucas thought this was going to be, you know, what it has grown into, to some extent, is, of course, what is now kind of nicknamed the Lucas Deal, which was basically unprecedented in the fact that the reason George Lucas is so obscenely wealthy at this point is because when he originally sold this to Fox at the time, which was not yet part of Disney, way back in the dark ages before Disney owned everything, he told them that he would forego his director's fee if they let him keep control of the property. That he got the rights to the intellectual property, the rights to the characters, the rights to merchandising, all that fun kind of stuff. And the studio said, well, you're nuts, but if you want to direct a movie for us for free, that's fine. Go ahead. Do that. We will make more money because of it. Because that just doesn't happen. When you sell a movie, you sell a movie to everybody. I mean, to the studio, I mean. And so you sell the entire rights to the studio, and you generally retain nothing. That turned out to be possibly the smartest deal in Hollywood history.
And will never be repeated.
Because now people know it. I mean, people understand what that is.
Yep. So, what does the Star Wars franchise, what does that mean to you in terms of your fandom?
Well, the interesting thing is that I kind of came a little late to Star Wars for somebody from our generation. Mm-hmm. I was a Star Trek fan from birth, basically. Mm-hmm. And while I do not at this point in my life subscribe to the whole Star Wars versus Star Trek thing, the one's better than the other, like, no, forget that. Like what you like. I'm fine with it. But I just never really was into Star Wars. And in fact, I don't really remember seeing all of the movies clearly in my mind until I was maybe 13.
That was around the special edition era.
Yeah, it would have been, but I watched them before the special edition, I know. And it was one of those things like you couldn't grow up as a kid in the 80s without knowing about Star Wars. But the movies finished in theaters far too young for us.
Yeah, first one was in 77, second one was in what, 81, and the other one was in 85?
83, I believe.
83.
So yeah, I mean, we would have been tiny.
Yes.
And even if we'd been taken to the theaters to see them, which I definitely was not, I wouldn't have remembered it anyway. It was one of those things that like I watched it when it came on TV a little bit because it did that, you know. And eventually I got more into it because a very good friend of mine was more into it and kept making jokes about Star Wars, and I was like, okay, you know, I'll give it more of a chance. When I was a little kid, I had fallen into that trap of you have to like Star Trek or you have to like Star Wars, and there's no crossover. And I was raised with Star Trek. I mean, it just that was a part of my life before I was even verbal. So, I kind of grew up thinking that I had to look down on Star Wars, which, you know, is ridiculous. Please do not let your kids fall into that trap. It's awful. Don't fall into that trap yourself either, because I still run into adults that do that. So yeah, I kind of fell into that trap, and as such, I kind of came into it a little bit later in my childhood as a massive fan. But once I was in, I was all the way in. You know, opening night of the special edition, super happy there. When the prequels came out, I actually skipped school to be on the, like, you know, we missed most of the line party, but we were there for part of the line party, and I was at a theater all day helping the theater host in costume for episode one. And you know, it's continued since then. You know, I absolutely love Star Wars, and I will show up for anything Star Wars. So.
Yeah, for me, I remember watching Return of the Jedi on cable as a kid, and that was my introduction to Star Wars. Yes, I started on the third movie. I was a kid, I didn't get it. Older, seeing the trilogy on television in, the commercial television format, and I kind of grew to appreciate the movies, all three movies even more, and to see them, that way. And oh, now they're coming out special editions in the theater. And that was the big push, was the way it was meant to be seen. And I went to go see the movie. I remember seeing the original Star Wars, I mean, New Hope, in theaters, the special edition, and I really liked it. I mean, I think while I liked the movies, watching them on television, it didn't really click with me until I saw New Hope in a theater. And in a way, like, they were right. You kind of have to see these kind of movies in a theater versus seeing them. Yeah, there's just something about that. And now, granted, no one has a theater experience right now, but
But you
there.
know, we partially do because you know, I watched this thing in my living room on a brand new ultra high def 4K giant flat screen that little kid me would just burst into tears if she knew that's what I had now. But now it's kind of like what a lot of people have, you know? It's like.
So yeah, I mean, like, I really love the movies, and everyone can argue on the prequels, and you can kind of argue on the sequel trilogy, but this is where it started. This movie right here, the first Star Wars movie. If anyone is going to do, especially now that it's May the 4th, if you're going to do a Star Wars rewatch, you kind of have to start with Episode 4. I know Lucas kind of wants people to go with Episode 1, but to me, it's like, you have to start with Episode 4. This is because it's the the gateway drug, if you want to call it that, of the Star Wars fandom. At least to me. Yeah.
If I had seen episode one first, I would not be a Star Wars fan.
Which is kind of why the whole 3D 4K re-release didn't actually work in theaters a few years ago. If you remember, for those who don't remember, what was it, about 10 years ago now?
Something like that, yeah.
That George Lucas was announcing that he was going to re-release Star Wars into theaters again in a
This was pre the Disney merger, for anybody keeping track.
Pre-Disney, he was going to re-release them 4K transfer in 3D. And everyone was really excited. Ooh. And he decided to start with episode one, The Phantom Menace. And there was a collective deflation of the entire fandom. And pretty much myself and a lot of people were like, yeah, when we get to episode four, I'll see it. And then, and well, episode one didn't do so well. And episode two and three were never released into theaters.
Yeah. And nothing else either. You know, it did that. You know, 4, 5, 6 never got that treatment because of that.
4K transfers exist, and we'll be talking about that in this review, but the 3D conversion never happened, only for the original trilogy.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be until years later that the episode 2 and 3 3D versions were actually shown at Star Wars Celebration, from what I understand. So they got the chance to see what Lucas wanted the world to see was a Star Wars trilogy in 3D.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about, because we both watched this, at least I did, I'm assuming you did, on Disney Plus.
Yes, I did watch this on Disney Plus.
And Disney Plus, at least for the moment, as we are recording this, has the special edition McClunky version.
Yes, the McClunky edit.
Yeah.
Release the McClunky cut.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was clamoring to release the McClunky cut, a thing we didn't even know existed until it showed up on Disney Plus.
That was a lot of when Disney Plus came out in this movie, a lot of people made this their first watch on Disney Plus and was like, "Oh no, Disney ruined Star Wars again. They're ruining this, blah blah blah." And then this, you can continue with that one.
Yeah. So, what is currently up on Disney Plus is the special edition cut that we saw in theaters, what, like 98 or something?
Yeah.
97.
They've updated some of the CGI, and this is the 4K transfer.
Yeah. But there's also a slightly different cut of the Han shot first, you know, Greedo scene where Greedo gets an extra line, or specifically an extra word, McClunky, which is not translated, and nobody has any idea what that word was supposed to mean, or why it even showed up in this edit. This seems to be a legacy edit from Lucas. And I guess somebody at Disney was like, this is the cleanest version we have, and we're going to put that up on Disney Plus.
According to Lucasfilm, Lucas did this edit. This was supposed to be for the 3D conversion. So this is the 4K conversion he put together for 3D conversion 10 years ago. That never happened, according to Lucasfilm.
Yeah, but as far as why this extra little bit of dialogue, and there is, I believe, a slightly different path that the laser bolts travel, the blaster shots travel, to make it sort of look like Han was a bit more justified. I don't know. Anyway.
It's one of those Han and Greedo shot at the same time.
Yeah. Whatever. So, yeah, it's a little baffling to the fandom, and it's a little baffling for those who have spent years trying to understand the mind of George Lucas, the constant tinkerer who is never done with his finished product. But, you know, it's out of his hands now. It's Disney.
And that was always the irony of it, because George Lucas was one of the people that went was one of the people that was just campaigning against the colorization of classic movies, saying, once these movies are done, they're done. This is the finished product, and you have to watch it that way. To take his movies back from the public, re-edit them, change them up, and saying, these are the way I wanted these movies to always look. To me, it's kind of a hypocritical thing.
Yeah, and he was. He was a big anti-Turnerization kind of proponent there. The thing is, though, is I think it's a little bit... it's a little bit understandable for me because human psychology is very much, and we're seeing it now, you know, George Lucas ruined my childhood, you know, Transformers movies ruined my childhood, thing of the day ruined my childhood.
Zack Snyder ruined my childhood.
Yeah, you know, and it's fine to hate on a movie that is badly made. I do it all the time.
And Joel Hodgson made a career out of it.
Yeah, but the thing is that human psychology is anything from your childhood is perfect and wonderful and should never be messed with. It is a pristine, perfect snowflake caught in a moment, and, you know, it is sacred. Anything that came about while you were an adult is newfangled and weird, and it doesn't matter if you change it, who cares? Okay? And so it's kind of understandable with Lucas, even though I disagree. I don't think it's the way, it's the mindset anybody should have. But, you know, he grew up on those classic movies. To him, they were pristine, perfect little things. And here comes Ted Turner and everybody, you know, in that movement going like, well, let's add color. Let's punch it up. Let's, you know, do all this kind of stuff. And he was like, no, you're ruining my childhood. Ted Turner ruined my childhood. But the thing is, when it comes to something you've created, well, it's still a brand new thing. It's not sacred. It's not pristine. It's your toy. You can take it out of the package and play with it. But unfortunately, he forgot, and I don't think he's ever quite caught on, is that if you are successful enough a creator, eventually your creation does not belong to you anymore.
Yeah.
You way. Have given it to the world, and it's now the world's. You know? More people have invested more of themselves than you realize. Maybe it's not the way it should be. Maybe it's unfair to the creator to say that. I don't know. I just know that it is. You know, once you put a piece of art out there, you no longer really get to control what the world does with it to some extent.
Or how the world perceives it,
or how it is interpreted, or any of that fun stuff. That is a kind of critical to the death of the author literary ideal. But Lucas never understood that. He always thought, like, it's my plaything, it's my constant living creation that I get to do and change. And there is always something with anything you create where you always kind of go like, oh, if I'd have just had a little more time, or if I'd have just had this resource, or if I'd have just, you know.
If this technology existed when I was making this thing.
Yeah. If CGI had really been more of a thing in 1977, I would have definitely, you know, put creatures in Mos Eisley or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that it didn't, okay? You worked with what you had. And here's the thing. What you had and what you did with what you had resonated all across the world.
Yeah.
So be happy with that and maybe stop looking at the flaws. And it's always hard for anybody who does any sort of creative thing to learn that lesson.
It's that whole analogy of seeing the forest from the trees. The creator is too close to it to see the big picture.
Yeah. You know, there's always these, the creators of my, two of my favorite cartoon shows keep saying like, oh, just skip season one and then come back to it later after you're a fan. And I always have to go like, ooh, I really hate that reasoning because season one is why I was a fan.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, you know, I've actually had this conversation about Venture Brothers, which I am a huge fan of and mention every second I can. In that, you know, I know this specific episode, I fell in love with that show and became a diehard fan. And it was an early season one episode. So to hear the creators talk about like, well, it's not really a good season. We did better. Like, yes, the show did better later on. There are definitely much better episodes, but I would hesitate to like tell anybody not to have the experience that I had because that's why I'm there. Mm. You know, yeah. It's weird to tell a little kid like, oh, well, you only want to watch, you know, Star Wars with the 4K conversion and all the CGI and all the bells and whistles, because it's like, well, but we didn't have that, and we're the biggest Star Wars fan. You know, like, our generation is insane over this property.
And it's, and speaking of that, you know, there's, you know, this generation will really never know those original movies. In a, according to Lucasfilm, they don't exist anymore, because whatever Lucas did for those special editions, according to Lucas, this is according to Lucasfilm, this is their official official release, is that whatever he did for those special editions pretty much wrecked those original films, those original film versions, the original negatives, whatever you want to call it, and you can't get the original films back again, which a lot of people don't believe. I wouldn't put it past George Lucas to actually have done that, just to say, these are the versions you'll get forever because I say so. But to me, it's kind of heartbreaking because there are children who are growing up with these movies now who will not have the same connection, in a way, as we did growing up with those original films. Because they'll see it with these CGI characters and these alternate scenes and versus what we saw with the practical effects and the whatever takes were used for that original movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And exactly. Weirdly lovable Jabba the Hutt. Yeah. I'll get to that later, but yeah. But you know, talking about just to go back to your point, there are people who have digitized their like original VHS copies.
And I know the Laserdisc copies as well.
And the Laserdisc copies. So they kind of exist on the internet if you're resourceful and want to go looking. But
not in official capacity.
Yeah, but they have not been released in official capacity since the special edition came out. And, you know, when we were talking about fandom and what it means to us, do you remember the trailer that they used to announce the special edition?
Yeah, because they had, I was actually watching it before we, the other day, it's like they had an image of a television with Star Wars on it for an entire generation, and the only way to watch Star Wars was on the television, and now you can see it the way it was meant to be seen, on the big screen!
And then that X-Wing flies out of the television, and it's 30 feet tall across a big screen.
Yeah.
I cannot explain to anybody who did not experience that what that properly felt like. Like, you know, granted, we were kids, we were teens. Mm-hmm. You know, we were in high school, I think, when this came out.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like, for the 20th anniversary, right? So it would have been, like, 97.
Yeah, that was to announce that this prequel trilogy was going to happen.
Yeah. But, you know, to just be sitting in a theater and, you know, yeah, the internet existed, but it didn't exist like it did today.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Just sitting in a theater, like, oh, I wonder what's gonna come out in movies soon, you know, because that was the way you found out. You might read something in a newspaper if you followed the entertainment section heavily, which, you know, I did. Mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden to just be sitting in a theater and be like, why am I watching, like, a tiny little TV screen in the middle of a 30-foot tall, you know? And then all of a sudden that X-Wing just filling the screen.
Yeah.
And then that music hits in full, you know,
surround sound
in the theater. And we're so used to it now because now Star Wars is just ubiquitous. It's like every year you go see the Star Wars, you know. But that was not something I had ever experienced in a theater before, was that John Williams score, that first big brass hit. In a theater, in full sound, and I am actually tearing up right now just talking about it. It is such a burned into my brain, huge moment of my childhood.
Yeah. It's, and I mean, but to be honest, you know, our own personal preferences aside, you know, Anyway, you want to watch Star Wars, that's fine. Go ahead. You want to watch the original versions, fine. You want to, if that's all you have, whatever. If you have special editions and that's your favorite version, fine. You want to watch these 4K restorations, if that's what you have, fine. I'm not going to disrespect you for that, but it's like, this is our own opinion. And if your opinion differs, okay, we will respect that.
But you know what? I discovered on this rewatch that my own opinion differs from my own opinion. I was sitting there watching it, and it gets to the Mos Eisley scene, which is really the first part in the movie where you really get that this is the special edition.
Yeah.
And you see all those CGI creatures, and the first part of my brain did the kind of modern thing we do now of like, special edition, George Lucas won't tinker with it. And then all of a sudden, I was a little kid again, and I remembered going like, there are giant creatures in Mos Eisley. There are people riding through on giant creatures. Like, this is amazing. Look at this technology. Look at what they've done, and it blends so well at the time. It blends so well with the original movie. You would have just thought that this was the way it has always been. And my little kid brain was absolutely blown away by it. I didn't hate the special editions, except for Han Shot First. Everybody always hated Han Shot First from the minute it was on screen. I remember in the theater people going like, wait a minute.
Yeah, Greedo shot first. Yeah, you know.
Yeah. But the other editions, you know, and as the special editions go on, you know, you get to Empire and all of a sudden there are these like beautiful scenes of Cloud City out the windows and stuff that have been added in later. I can remember just like openly weeping in a theater because it was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen. So I didn't hate the special edition except for that one thing. Mm-hmm. Until the world told me I kind of had to.
Mm.
And I kind of had forgotten that. I had gotten so used to being like the Lucas said that. And there is something to be said for that. There is a very clear thing of, you know, maybe an artist should just kind of leave his work alone and, you know, maybe J.K. Rowling should stop, like, adding things in that were never in the books via Twitter. Okay.
Stop making fan fiction canon.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird. Although part of it may just be my own personal bias, because when Neil Gaiman does that stuff, I just go nuts. I'm like, this is the greatest thing ever. But that's like an academic argument we can have. But today was kind of the first time I really remembered being a kid sitting in a theater, seeing the special edition for the first time, seeing these technological advancements, seeing a thing that had never really been done to a movie before.
Yeah.
And just absolutely loving every second of it. Considering it such a historic moment, considering it such, you know? And so, yeah, I'm of two minds about it, because while, yes, logically I do agree that, you know, Lucas made some mistakes and I do not agree with all of them, there is still that little kid me who's just like, man, I got to see Star Wars on the big screen and it was better.
Yeah, it's one of those things that if I had a time machine, I'd go back to 77 and see Star Wars with a crowd that has never seen Star Wars ever, just to get their reaction.
You know? Yeah, my favorite behind the scenes story of the making of Star Wars is that when the kind of first rough cut before they really put it into previews or anything was done,
the test audiences.
Before that. Mm-hmm. Like, they had just kind of finished that cut, and they hadn't shown it to test audiences yet. Mm-hmm. The story goes that George Lucas got all of his director friends together. And in the 70s, there was a group of young upstart, just starting to make their names directors, who are now legendary. Lucas, Scorsese, Spielberg, you know. Mm-hmm. Coppola. All right. And they were all kind of friends, you know. And so he brings all these people together, all his director friends, into a private screening just for his friends. And he plays them this movie. And after, you know, they're done, he was like, yeah, I waived my director's fee because I really want to retain control. I think this could be big. And right after the film, he had to like leave the thing as they were talking about it. And everybody had been like, oh, good for you, George. You know, yeah, that's a cute little movie you got there. And as soon as Lucas left the room, the directors started talking. They were like, oh man, this is a piece of crap. His career's over. This is the end for him. Poor George, he has sunk everything into this, and it's not going to pan out for him. And the one voice in the room that said differently happened to be Steven Spielberg, who immediately said, he is about to be richer than all of us put together.
And Spielberg was right.
Yeah, and I was like, that's such an incredible story to me. I have no idea if it's real, but it's one of those legendary Hollywood stories.
I think it's one of those showing science fiction to a science fiction fan and showing science fiction to someone who generally isn't into science fiction.
But, you know, it's not even science fiction. And the funny thing is that, you know, Star Wars for a lot of it was based on Kurosawa movies. Are these Japanese samurai movies that were really, you know, they were the big thing for film students, snobby film students to be into. And the original draft of Star Wars is almost entirely a shot-for-shot remake of a Kurosawa film. In fact, George Lucas tried to get the rights to just remake a Kurosawa film, but in space. And this had been done before, because, you know, Magnificent Seven, the Great Western, is just a Kurosawa film but done as a Western, you know. So it wasn't that they hadn't done these things before, but Lucas was the first one that wanted to be like, well, but what if Kurosawa, but in space? And when he didn't get the rights to kind of officially do that, he changed it just enough to avoid copyright suits. But really not all that much, because if you know what you're looking for, you know, you can peg the characters that 3PO and R2 are based off of. You can peg the exact characters that, you know, gave birth to Obi-Wan in his original form, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it stayed so true that there's actually, he tried to do the same thing again in the prequels, and again ran into a sort of similar issue, and in trying to change that, ended up kind of ruining the story of the prequels, and anyway.
I mean, and I love the fact that, I think it was last year, that someone took a Star Wars movie and kind of made it a Kabuki-style play.
Yeah, they redid it as Kabuki Theater. In fact, just about a week ago, I watched a prolonged interview with the guy who starred in it, who is like the biggest Kabuki actor in all of Japan.
So it's kind of
It wasn't like a tiny little like, oh, some community theater decide, like, no, this is literally the biggest star in Japan, you know, his company put this on. So
it's like the American equivalent will be Star Wars on Broadway.
Yeah. With Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yeah.
You
know, like, a great Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda is so great. They should put that guy in a Star Wars sometime. So, you know, it's not really science fiction. It's a fantasy epic. It's space wizards, you know. It's all that kind of fun stuff. But you know what? It's also science fiction. I'm kind of sick of the like really weird razor distinction. Again, it's academic, but I'm not sure it's like super interesting. And it's definitely not a thing that should be a basis for your like snobbery.
Speculative fiction is what they want to be called, but it's like science fiction. What's wrong with the calling it science fiction? I mean, if you want to call it whatever you want, that's fine. But it's like, this is what, you know. Maybe it's me being a snob in my own way, but you know, it's like, I don't see anything wrong with calling it science fiction.
Yeah, no, and but there, you know, there are people who get up in arms, and I'm like, yes, you can also call it high fantasy set in space. You can call it, you know, a retelling of the hero's journey. You can call all of that is fine. Please go write your thesis on it. But I'm not sure that it's really that useful in day-to-day conversation. But the interesting thing is that we think of Star Wars as such a groundbreaking thing. And yet, it just came up in conversation with my father the other day when he saw that Disney Plus was going to have John Carter of Mars. They should have kept that title instead of shortening it. And my father said, you know, I really enjoyed that movie, and I was baffled by the fact that it tanked. Because it is a very kind of faithful retelling of the John Carter of Mars books, you know?
In a way, I understand that, but the problem is John Carter of Mars pretty much created everything that we would know about the modern space epic. Whatever space movie you want to talk about, whether you want to talk about Star Wars or Flash Gordon or whatever, that was all in John Carter of Mars. But we've seen it so many times, it's old hat. So by the time they actually made a John Carter of Mars movie, it's stuff we've already seen.
The interesting thing is that I'm so on point with my analysis, you just delivered it verbatim for me before I got to it.
Sorry.
But that was almost word for word my exact argument to my father, is because Disney did not sell that movie correctly. What they should have sold it as was, you love Star Wars, right? Now see the thing that inspired Star Wars. It's going to have all the things you like about Star Wars, but it did it first. Come see the thing George Lucas read when he was a kid, but now on the big screen, just like Star Wars. Because at the time, Disney didn't own Star Wars, and they were trying to compete with Star Wars. And they dropped the ball on not selling it as a, this thing is Star Wars, but it did it first. Come see the original. And I think if they'd have done that, it would have been more well received. But I've spoken to a lot of people over the years who were like, man, can you believe that weird movie Disney did where they just ripped off Star Wars and then gave it a really bland name? And it was like, well, no, if you understand the history and you know where it's coming from, that's a great movie. But if all you know is Star Wars, you're going to look at it and be like, boring, we've seen all that already.
Yeah.
Not realizing that what you're seeing is the original. It's the same thing we talked about with Zorro.
Yeah.
That now we look back on it and we're like, oh, this trope again. Not realizing that, like, well, yeah, but when they did it first. It wasn't a trope then, you know? Yeah. It's the ending to, Invisible Man. Well, how do you find the Invisible Man in the room? Well, obviously you grab a bunch of sand or dirt or flour or whatever and throw it around the room until it coats the guy. But when it was put as the ending of that novel, that was a brand new idea that nobody had ever thought of before. But it just happened to be such a brilliant idea that nobody's really come up with anything better.
Yeah.
So now it seems old hat, you know. And same thing. And it's just that the first thing you see do something is what you're always going to
identify that with.
Yeah. So if you see Star Wars do a thing first, it doesn't matter if you go back in time. If you go back in time as a Star Wars fan and watch those Kurosawa movies, you're going to be like, wow, this is just Star Wars. But it's like, no, Star Wars is just Kurosawa. You're just watching it in reverse.
Yeah. And another inspiration, if you want to go into different a different path with that way, was the serials, the movie serials that Lucas grew up watching. That opening crawl was a staple of the old serials back in the day before television. If you wanted to see the next episode of your favorite show, you would go to the movie theater, pay your change, as we would say previously, and see the new episode of that thing, whether it's a space opera or a Western or Batman or Superman, you would see the next episode. And then it would, before every episode, there would be a crawl that would inform you of everything that happened before, everything you need to know before this episode starts.
Yeah, in case you missed an episode.
Yeah. And I think back then it was like today, it would be a new one every week or every month that you would go to the theater and see them. I mean, telling someone today that they saw their favorite show once a month in the theater, you'd be crazy, like, you know, but that's the way it was back then. There was no television.
Yeah, one of my friends on Facebook just put that she was talking to her 5-year-old, and he said, "Mommy, come do something." And she said, "I can't, I'm watching a show." "Well, pause the show." "I can't pause the show." "Well, I don't understand. Just watch it later streaming." "I can't watch," because it was a live show and they didn't have a DVR. And kids today don't understand, like, what do you mean you're watching, like, you can't just watch it whenever you want. Stop watching it now. Watch it 10 minutes from now.
Yeah, it's the net, you know, I hate saying it, but it is the Netflix generation.
I don't hate saying it. I would have loved to have grown up like that. I absolutely hate, like, cliffhangers and having to wait for a next, and I, you know, it happens to me now, because I still watch things on broadcast TV, But, you know, I get to the end of it and I'm like, okay, time for the next step. Crap, I've got to wait a week. Who came up with this stupid idea?
Yeah.
And if I'm binging a show, I will sit down and watch an entire season, like, without moving. You know, I'll watch, like, 10 episodes in a row. But my father can do about 2 and then he's done. Like, I need to stop now. You know, that's enough of that for tonight. Maybe in 4 or 5 days we can come back to it and watch another 2 episodes. And that drives me crazy because I am...
I think it really comes down to how invested are you with the story you're presented.
Yeah, I really need to know what's going to happen. Like, right now. I have no more patience anymore. It's like, life is too short. I have to know the resolution of this right now. And it's driving me nuts. Like, as we're recording this, it's getting towards the close to the season finale of Westworld. And I am, like, absolutely losing my mind of, like, I really have to know how this part of the story wraps up. So yeah, I'm loving the binge watching part of the internet. I love it. I'm glad that's where we are as a species. But I know it's not for everybody, but it is definitely for me, and it's always the way I wanted to be. And when TV on DVD became a thing and you could just buy a season and watch it, like, all at once whenever you wanted to, oh, so good.
All right, so we spent about an hour telling our own feelings on the Star Wars movies. This is going to be a long one, folks.
You know what you were getting into.
Let's kind of talk about George Lucas, the man, film student, and he had already done THX-1138. You'll hear that a lot in these movies.
Yeah. He did a lot of other movies too. It gets name dropped in a lot of other movies.
And especially now, in like a lot of, like, I think even Wall-E had a THX gag in it.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So pretty much anything set in space is going to get that THX-1138 joke. Yeah. And you're going to get, and he already did American Graffiti. And that was what really put him on the map, was American Graffiti. So pretty much he had fair game to do whatever he wanted. And what did he want to do? He wanted to do a space opera based on the serials he grew up with, based on the Japanese movies he grew up with, based off the books he read as a kid, and his own daddy issues.
Yeah.
So we're gonna talk about his 2-hour therapy session called Star Wars. I don't know what much we can say more that we haven't already said about George Lucas. Dude knew he had a hit, was smart enough to retain the rights, and made himself a freaking multi-millionaire, even a billionaire, and he made more money selling it to Disney.
Yeah, I mean, there's like 18 generations of Lucases that will be obscenely wealthy because of what he did.
They will never have to work a day in their lives.
Yeah, I hate them all for it, and will work to redistribute their wealth, but...
I think that's all we can talk about George Lucas. So let's talk about the score, the John Williams score. Because I honestly, and there probably is a version, I could watch a version of Star Wars that's just the John Williams score and the visuals. No sound effects, no dialogue, and I will still get the same satisfaction of watching the movie.
Yeah, probably. It would be interesting to do this as kind of like a film project with somebody putting in, like, silent film title cards. You know?
Black and white the whole thing?
Well, maybe not even black and white the whole thing, but just at one point it'd be like, you know, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. I have hidden the plans in this droid. And then that's it. That's all the dialogue you get. You know, for like 5 minutes.
I know someone did a fan film of that, which is pretty much taking the main plot of the original Star Wars and making it as a silent film serial.
Yeah. Because I have learned something watching silent films, which is that the score you put under that changes the entire tone of the film.
Yeah.
I mean, just the music that is playing alongside the images. And I think that that's what... I think that's what John Williams does better than almost anybody. There's a couple of composers working now that I would say are very close. But if you listen to a John Williams score, you can remember everything that is happening in the film just by hearing the music.
Yep.
You can remember every beat.
And if someone can just sum it, like, I can go like, ba-da, dun, da-da-da, and you'll know exactly the part of the movie I'm talking about.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting because I think, honestly, the greatest thing he wrote for Star Wars, it came from the prequels and, like, the worst movie of the prequels. I mean, Duel of the Fates.
That is a beautiful piece of music.
If he had written nothing else in his career, Duel of the Fates would have, like, propelled him into genius level, you know. Interestingly, though, much like George Lucas, John Williams was drawing off of earlier things, too. Go back and listen to Holt's The Planets. Especially like Mars the Bringer of War. You will hear a lot of Star Wars in that. So, you know, it's that good artist copy, great artist steal kind of thing.
I mean, really, if you don't want to talk about Star Wars, you can talk about Jaws.
Yeah, but I mean,
we could talk about Close Encounters.
Yeah, the funny thing about Jaws is that
two notes.
When Spielberg heard that, he actually said, "John, do you think we could put it in a major key and see how it sounds?" And apparently, John Williams just stared at him until he walked away.
Da da da. It'll be the heroic theme of Jaws. Da 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 da
da da da da da. Fun fact: first clarinet in the Jaws score is actually played by Steven Spielberg himself.
Ooh.
Because he was a clarinet player in high school or whatever, and wanted to do that anyway. But John Williams, I think, is about a good 60% of why Star Wars succeeded.
Yeah.
I think without his film score, this movie would not have seemed nearly as epic. It is kind of a goofy space fantasy.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, it's, you know, I listen to Dan Avedon all the time on Game Grumps just talking about it. It's just space wizards. And he doesn't say that to be, like, mean or put it down, but just, like, we do have to remember that even though we love this thing, it is objectively a very goofy thing to love.
Yeah, a lot of fandom stuff. I mean, it's, you know, people love superheroes, but it's just guys in tights jumping around.
Yeah, and it's fine. It's actually my favorite thing about nerdy pursuits. It's like, yes, we get that this is... Well, most of us get that this is not serious business. Most of us get that this is silly and fun and awesome. But, you know, you take silly and you put a John Williams score over it.
And it becomes epic.
Oh my god. I mean, have you ever, just talking about Jaws again, because I freaking love Jaws. I mean, have you seen the scene where Quint gets eaten by the shark?
Yeah.
Mute that scene and just watch it without sound. It is goofy. It is ridiculous. The mechanical shark does not look scary. It looks like just a dude with a puppet thrashing around. It wasn't. He actually like broke his leg during that because the mechanical shark didn't work right. But you take that goofiness and you put the, like, dunna, 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 dunna over it, and it's just the most epic thing you've ever seen in your life.
Yep.
You know, you take, you know, Richard Dreyfuss playing with mashed potatoes, it's a goofy scene. But you put that great sweeping orchestral, you know, music, and suddenly you get, this means something. This is important. You know? And so I think that's what John Williams did for Star Wars. I don't think Star Wars is a good movie without John Williams.
Agreed.
So, yeah. I mean, and you know, this and Jaws were really the things that I'm not saying that John Williams didn't have a career before that, because that's ridiculous. Of course he did. He was like the biggest name to work on either of those films. Mm-hmm. Spielberg and Lucas were upstarts, you know, just barely making their names when they made those movies. But using John Williams was what made the blockbuster a thing.
Yep.
Because those two movies are what gave us the blockbuster idea, especially the summer blockbuster.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that John Williams having an idea of, you know, I put this little piccolo flourish here and suddenly it goes from interesting to the most important thing in the world. The man is a genius, and I will continue to bow at the shrine of John Williams for as long as I live.
Alright, we've talked about the director, we've talked about the composer. Let's actually talk about the people that are in this movie. Let's start with Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker. Now, there are two things most people will know Mark Hamill for. You will either know him as Luke Skywalker, or you'll know him as the Joker.
And you'll or you'll know him as both.
Yes, but I'm saying it depends on when you heard him first.
Yeah.
And there's two so opposite characters. You have Luke Skywalker, who, at least in this movie, is the wide-eyed, innocent kid who just wants adventure. And then you have the Joker, who is clinically insane.
I also think it helps that he was two drastically different ages when he... But, I mean, there's, like, you know, a good 20 years between... him playing Luke Skywalker for the first time, and him playing the Joker for the first time.
And Mark Hamill was not a well-known actor at the time.
Yeah, he'd done, like, one or two things, but he was not a household name by any reason. And in fact, none of them were. Really.
Yeah.
I mean, you had Debbie Reynolds' daughter... You had the carpenter that worked on George Lucas's house until George said, hey, do you want to audition for a movie? You're pretty good looking.
And the guy that starred in Hammer Vampire movies.
Yeah, and the guy that starred in Hammer Vampire movies, who had already become kind of a has-been. I mean, Bridge on the River Kwai and stuff. Bridge on the River Kwai with Alec Guinness was kind of the big name.
Yeah.
You know, Peter Cushing definitely was, you know, the Hammer tour guy, kind of at that point, I think, and was is a slightly on a downturn of what career he had, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Alec Guinness was kind of like, oh, hey, somebody put Alec Guinness in another movie. I had been wondering what had happened to that guy. Because Alec Guinness had been, like, a really big star, and then he wasn't such a big star, and he really needed the money. And Alec Guinness absolutely hated Star Wars until the day he died.
That is a definite the example of, it was just a job.
Yeah, it was just a job for him. He hated being asked to autograph anything. He hated being called Obi-Wan. He hated that was probably the thing he was going to be remembered for. And it is absolutely the thing he will be remembered for in perpetuity.
Yeah.
You know, but there are... All of these people, and honestly, do we even need to get into their individual careers? Because I don't think we do. That's the thing about doing Star Wars, is when I thought about this episode, I'm like, what can we really say that hasn't been said before except our personal feelings on things? I mean, that's kind of why I continue going for personal feelings.
Yeah. I mean, let's go through them for formality's sake. Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker. Harrison Ford as Han Solo. Without a doubt, the biggest star to come out of these movies was Harrison Ford.
Yeah, I mean, especially as a box office draw.
Yeah. Carrie Fisher as Princess Leia. Peter Cushing as Tarkin. Alec Guinness as Obi-Wan. Then you got Anthony Daniels, the C-3PO, voice and in the costume. Why was he in the costume, George? He didn't need to be.
Because Anthony Daniels is amazing. I will tell you a personal story about Anthony Daniels, because I got to talk to him at length once at a convention.
Go ahead.
And he thought it was hilarious that the thing I wanted to know most about was the Star Wars episode of The Muppet Show. Because of course I did.
Two franchises that would eventually be bought by Disney.
Bought by Disney, yeah. But at the time, neither were. But that is absolutely my favorite episode of The Muppet Show ever. I can quote every single second of that show to this day.
Mark Hamill and his cousin Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, Mark Hamill as two parts, Mark Hamill and his cousin Luke Skywalker. But it contains a musical interlude where C-3PO, R2-D2, and Chewbacca do a dance. I apologize if you can hear the barking. I do not know what has my dog up in arms, but I am not going to go find out. It's probably a squirrel. But anyway, the three of them do a dance. Here's the thing is that Anthony Daniels actually can dance. Kenny Baker, of course, was just in the R2-D2 costume, and it's basically, you know, like a joystick remote control, whatever. So not really a lot of choreography. He basically just spins back and forth, you know, one direction, then the other direction, and then back, you know. Mm. Peter Mayhew was already having problems with his hips. He had had problems for a long time. And also, he had never really been kind of a dancer. He was more of a strength guy, bodybuilder and stuff. So he didn't really have any choreography. And if you watch the Muppet Show clip, he basically just sways back and forth and kicks a leg every now and then and waves his arms. Anthony Daniels, on the other hand, is tap dancing in like a 75-pound C-3PO metal suit.
Now, as you're describing it, I'm having the vision again in my brain of that episode.
Yeah, and it is impressive. It's impressive to watch even today, because it really is a fully choreographed tap dance routine. Apparently, it was just choreographed by him. And I asked him about it. I was like, man, that's such an amazing scene. And he said, I hated Kenny and Peter by the end of that day. Because the thing is that he had by far the most difficult job of this, like, intricate tap dance routine in a very heavy costume. And if you've never been near Anthony Daniels in person, you really do not realize how thin and slight of a man he is, and always has been. That's why he's in the 3PO suit. He is very slender. And so just him being able to take the weight of that suit on his slender frame is kind of impressive as is, but to be able to do a dance routine that he like jumps up and clicks his heels and stuff is even more impressive. And he said that he would do this dance routine and then they would go like, oh, cut, we got to do it again. Kenny, you spun the wrong way. Oh, cut, we got to do it again. Peter, you moved a little too far off frame. And he said the amount of times he had to do that over and over and over and over again to get that scene. But it's a beautiful scene, and it's still one of my favorite things, because it's so ridiculous, and only on The Muppet Show would it really been like, and now a dance break between two droids and a Wookiee.
To be fair, that's how I assume a Wookiee would dance anyway.
Yeah, We've seen a Wookiee's taste in music thanks to the holiday special. So
don't no.
Their dance.
That will be the one thing I will put my foot down. There are a lot of things I'm willing to watch for this podcast. The Star Wars holiday special is not one of them.
That will be a special episode where we will find a guest host. Okay, so. I absolutely love Anthony Daniels and will defend him because he was just awesome. He was also the only one of the cast of Star Wars to actually tell fans with like zero thing of you are going to hate the prequels. Because he told me I was going to hate the prequels. Because I talked to him just after he finished recording his lines for episode one. And he...
What do you mean, naked?
Yeah, I mean, he knew nothing about episode one except for the lines he had been given to read. He didn't even get to see the context. They handed him 3PO's lines, and they said, say these lines into a microphone. He was never on set. He was never... It was just like... He was in a booth somewhere in England talking into a microphone with no context. And Anthony Daniels was probably the most proud of being in Star Wars of anybody. He read all of the novels at the time because they were, at the time, the official continuation of his character, and he wanted to be able to talk to fans about it. He wrote a monthly article for the Star Wars fan magazine. He was very into it. And they called him and they were like, hey, come be in the new Star Wars. And he was thrilled. And they were like, oh yeah, we're just going to shove you in a booth somewhere. You're only going to get to read your lines, but it's just enough to know that we've completely ruined the backstory of your character that you have spent decades learning. He said George Lucas didn't even talk to him. It was just like his agent was like, show up on this day, record, and leave. He was very honest with the fans. He was like, I don't know the rest of it, but just from reading 3PO's lines, I know that you're all going to hate it.
He wasn't wrong.
He was, you know, he's kind of a fanboy himself. So, you know, it's interesting.
And so let's just wrap up our main cast, David Prowse and James Earl Jones, collectively as Darth Vader.
Yeah.
There and somewhere exists an entire version of Star Wars with David Prowse doing Vader's lines.
Because that's what he thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
He did not know until he saw it in the theater on like preview night that he was being dubbed over. And he did not take it well initially. I don't blame him. That seems like an awful move on George Lucas' part.
That's a Richard maneuver right there.
Yes, it is very much a Richard maneuver. If we're going to talk about George Lucas as a person, I've heard things that make me not so happy with George Lucas as a person. And those two stories about how Anthony Daniels and David Prowse were treated are kind of two of them. All of these people are amazing, in what they do, and I'm glad that so many of them decided to stick with the franchise.
Yep.
Even though they didn't really, a lot of them didn't really need to.
Yeah.
I mean, especially Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford wanted out as soon as he could.
Yeah, Harrison Ford wanted out before the end of the original trilogy. That getting frozen in carbonite was supposed to be the end of Han Solo. That was literally supposed to be the last you ever saw of him. And they only cut him back for the sequel trilogy if they agreed to kill him off in the first movie.
And if, you know, unfortunately his space mom hadn't passed, we wouldn't have had him in Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, I think Carrie Fisher may be the greatest thing to come out of Star Wars. I absolutely love Mark Hamill. Don't get me wrong. I love Mark Hamill, but Carrie Fisher, there is something special about her that has touched so many people's lives.
There's a reason we call her Space Mom.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, everything she did for mental health awareness, the kind of honest and open way she lived her life.
I love, my favorite Carrie Fisher anything is her roasting George Lucas at the American Film Institute. What was it? The Lifetime Achievement Award they gave him?
Yeah. Where she ends flipping him off. Yeah.
Yeah. And her famous flip off.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, has a woman ever been so tied inextricably to the middle finger? I don't think so. But
the fact that after she passed, Mark Hamill said, Carrie's looking down on the world, flipping it off.
Yeah, and there have been days since her passing that just, like, you know, I'll be in a major depression and my Facebook feed will just come across of, like, Space Mom would want you to, like, take your pills and go out and flip off the world today. And I've gone like, yep, okay, Space Mom, I'm gonna do that.
Especially in current times.
Well, yeah, I mean, anything since 2016. I mean, come on. Yeah. But
not just as an actress, but as a script doctor. That was pretty much what her claim to fame for this franchise. Yes, she's known as Princess Leia, but she actually worked a lot on the scripts for essentially 6 of the 9 films.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of other Hollywood movies that, you know,
she didn't get credit for.
Yeah, and that's the way of a script doctor. But you can look up, go type into Google Carrie Fisher script doctor and look at her history of work that we know of. I'm pretty sure there's films in there that she never got credit even on Google for. But she was an amazing writer.
Mm-hmm.
And was able to help punch up so many things, including quite a few of the Star Wars films, like you just said. I mean, it's just amazing.
And again, this goes back to A New Hope, the movie we're actually talking about.
Yeah, and she was, what, 19?
Yeah.
Doing that? Come on.
You can say a lot that, you know, we talk about her on-screen roles at all, but really, I would say her real calling was behind the scenes.
Yeah, she was very, very good in a kind of production role. And she had such a brilliant mind and such a fast wit and such a way with words. And it bothered me for a long time when I started to learn more about her, that she was primarily known as, you know, the girl in the slave Leia costume.
Yeah, even she hated that. But she was like, I was forced, you know, tell your kids the character was forced to put it on. She didn't like it and killed the person that forced her to put it on.
And then yeah. But, you know, I'm glad that now I think people see her in a different light. And I'm glad that the sequel trilogy gave her the kind of general Leia position.
Yeah.
Because I think that's really the part that she was always playing in her mind. And go back and watch A New Hope right now and think about General Leia. That's the part Carrie Fisher was always playing. You can see it immediately. And if you go back and watch, there's a great interview that she gave, all in French, because she spoke French, people, where she talks about that the reason she took the role is because Princess Leia was not a damsel in distress. Yes, she sort of gets rescued by the two male leads, who immediately bungle the job and she has to take over. The original trilogy is full.
Her with the gun. Yeah.
Yeah, the original trilogy is full of Princess Leia just going like, you two are idiots, I'm going to grab a gun and save us. Which I love, and Carrie Fisher was perfect for that role. Mm-hmm. Because that's who Carrie Fisher was in real life. I'm surrounded by people who are screwing up. I need to do something. I need to step up and make this better.
And the sass that Leia has, especially for a movie, especially for the 70s, this kind of character really, yes, it was the women empowerment movement. You can credit it to that. But you didn't really see a woman kind of just not take the bad guy's BS.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, even in New Hope, she is there, you know, on the ground in the Death Star raid battle room helping plan battles.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, she's got the princess title, but it's very obvious that she's a military leader, too, in the first movie. And that seems to have skipped a lot of people.
That went over
so many years.
Yeah, because everything, oh, she's the princess, she's the damsel in distress. You know, the girl, you know, if you're the girl in the group playing Star Wars, you're playing Princess Leia, but you're never given the gun. We're going to rescue you.
Yeah, and even, you know, even when I was starting out going to conventions and stuff, there would be all these panels of like, and then you have Princess Leia who just sits around and does nothing and gets rescued all the time. And I'm thinking, no, she doesn't. You know,
she goes undercover as a bounty hunter with a live bomb saying, give me Han Solo.
Yeah, she goes in there to rescue her man.
Yes.
It does not go well, but, you know, eventually she murders the guy who took her prisoner. So it's all good in the end. I could do like 4 hours just talking about how great Carrie Fisher is. And I'm glad that before she died, she finally got some of that love and some of that respect. And I also love that Daisy Ridley asked her on like her first day on set to play Rey, what advice do you have for me as a woman in Star Wars? And Carrie Fisher's first words were, never let them put you in a bikini.
Wise words.
Yeah. Her second words were, and don't railroad your way through the male half of the crew. Because it was Carrie Fisher.
Carrie, let's just put this in. All right, let's be honest. We have a lot of young, attractive people. They're spending a lot of time together. Things happen. let's not go with the fact that Harrison Ford was married at the time.
Yeah.
All right. So let's
love you, Space Mom.
Yes, we love you. We miss you. And that character will live forever.
Yeah. I'm just going to say, you know, I'm not sure that there's a lot we can really talk about the plot of Star Wars. Everybody knows the plot of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Everybody knows every single beat in this movie. Let's talk about the most impactful moments in this film to you personally. When you think of this film, what are the scenes where you're like, man, that's my favorite?
Honestly, one of the things that I always think about is that opening scene with the stormtroopers breaking onto Leia's ship and this Darth Vader comes and walks in through the smoke. I want her alive!
That is one of the greatest villain reveals ever.
Yeah.
And you know what? You can say what you want about Rogue One, but the way that they tied the ending of Rogue One into that scene...
With CGI Carrie Fisher saying hope.
Well, but also, go back and watch New Hope now. And watch that first scene after watching Rogue One. And all of a sudden you realize what an absolute badass Princess Leia is. Because she knows that Darth Vader had almost stepped foot on her ship like 2 days earlier. In the place where she got the plans. Okay. Mm-hmm. And yet she still has the guts to walk up to him and put on her snooty little British Imperial accent. I don't know what Carrie was thinking, and she says neither does she. But
well, everyone else was talking with a British accent, so she wanted to fit in.
Yeah, I guess so. But she stands right up to Darth Vader, who she has just been told by her crew, like, he just levitated like half of us and threw us into a wall. I barely made it out with my life.
Yeah.
Okay. Imagine that one little dude that, like, hands off the code as, like, Vader is cutting down all of his comrades, okay? And all of that, and Leia still has the audacity to go, like, I am a member of the Imperial Senate and a princess, and this is just a diplomatic ship, and we have not been anywhere near the Rebel Alliance or the stolen Death Star plans. Nope, nothing to see here.
Princess Leia in that scene has the biggest cojones in the universe.
Yeah! And that's what I loved about Rogue One. It's like, okay, you know, the rest of the movie, we could talk about that. But the fact that that ending scene kind of ties it together just makes you go, like, Leia was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no, it's like, no fear. This has been literally caught red-handed. You know,
hand in the cookie jar and telling you, hand in the cooking jar telling mom, no, I didn't take any cookies, with chocolate all over her face.
Yeah, it's exactly that thing. And I absolutely just love that she's at that point buying time for the droids to get away, you know, which was, of course, always the scene. But I think Vader, you know, that coming through the smoke and the John Williams score behind, that's got to be one of the greatest villain entrances in the history of the world.
It's skipping ahead further, but upon this rewatch, there's a line that's kind of synonymous with the younger Obi-Wan Kenobi that is Obi-Wan's very first line in this movie. Hello there!
Yeah.
You I gotta say that, because everyone goes with, you know, young Obi-Wan Kenobi jumping behind General Grievous saying, hello there, and like, that's his very first line in Episode 4 of New Hope, is him saying, hello there!
Yeah, in a way, the prequels kind of ruin Obi-Wan through this whole thing, because the entire time, to borrow from Mystery Science Theater here, every time Obi-Wan says anything to Luke about the past, you just want to go like, liar, liar, liar.
From a certain point of view.
From a certain point of view, which is completely false and a lie that I am telling you. There is no defending Obi-Wan in this. He is just a lying piece of work. Oh, I already have the unpopular opinion that the Jedi Order is not a good thing. I don't think the Jedi are the good guys. I don't think the Sith are the good guys either, necessarily.
Shades of Grey and all that?
No, I think that they both have the wrong idea about the, like, two different wrong ideas about the same thing.
It's kind of what coming out of, and I'm going to mention it, Last Jedi, coming out of Last Jedi, that I was hoping that they would go in that direction, that there's going to be no more Sith, there's going to be no more Jedi, and Rey is going to create something new, of the a new kind of Force user that isn't a Sith, that isn't a Jedi, a new way to a better future. We never got it, but that was the hope that I had coming out of Last Jedi when it did come out.
Last Jedi may be one of my favorite Star Wars films.
Controversy!
I will stand for everything Rian Johnson was trying to do there. I was super excited by the new direction. I absolutely hated about 90% of the stuff that J.J. Abrams did with Force Awakens.
Force Awakens or Rise of Skywalker?
with Force Awakens, and then Rian Johnson came in, and I was like, oh, we got somebody good in the chair now. All right, this is going to be good. It's going to be new Star Wars. And then J.J. Abrams returned, and we got the boring, Cardassian, repetitive, epic ending of everything is the same. Everyone is related. Everything is the boring, most obvious answer to every...
Apparently that was enough for people, though, because all the people who hated Last Jedi loved Rise of Skywalker for that very same reason.
Well, yeah, if you are the type of person, and I don't say this like in a pejorative way, but if you are the type of person who you want to go home every night and eat mac and cheese and a hot dog, then if I bring you mac and cheese and a hot dog the next night, you're going to love it. If you're the type of person that likes to have, like, you know, a curry on this night and some tacos on that night, and yeah, also mac and cheese and a hot dog on one night, you know, if I just start bringing you mac and cheese and a hot dog every single night, you are going to get bored of that very quickly. And I'm not saying that either is necessarily better. It's just the flavor that you like.
Yeah.
I like subversive stuff that challenges preconceived notions. And that's what Rian Johnson was trying to do. Some people wanted the, what I call the Cardassian repetitive epic version of Star Wars, where it's like, no, everybody must be related, and the Force is a super special thing that only the super powerful elite have, and, you know, that's not for me. But I enjoyed the movie. It was a fun ride, but it was, you know, mac and cheese and hot dog again.
Yeah.
For the 8th time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That I can
So, you know, I really liked what Rian Johnson was trying to do. It was my kind of flavor of things. If it's not yours, okay, fine.
I agree with you. I liked Last Jedi, and it was willing to break the mold, break the formula, try something new and be daring and challenge the status quo of Star Wars.
Yeah.
And not everyone liked it. People didn't want the status quo to change.
Yeah, just, I mean, the short version of my summation is I think both the Jedi and the Sith are wrong, because I think that it's wrong to cut out half of the Force no matter which way you're going.
True.
I think to say, like, oh, the dark side is always evil is a very absolutist position. Jedi, who say only a Sith deals in absolutes, he said absolutely. But
even coming
but
from...
also, the yeah, Sith... The Sith saying that, like, well, the light side is wrong and restrictive. And, like, no. You know? That is kind of the one thing I liked about Rey, is, like, you know, she was able to use Force Heal and Force Lightning. You know? I mean, maybe there's... you could mix the two as long as you use them in their proper context.
Yeah, yeah. And that was kind of the thing about balance to the Force, that when they were talking about balance to the Force, I always took it as both sides are even. Two Sith, two Jedi. But for George Lucas, balance to the Force was completely eradicating the dark side and only the light exists, which that's not balance.
Yeah.
You need to have the yin with the yang.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting, because for, you know, somebody who's, you know, basing his big thing on these kind of Eastern philosophies, which are not a struggle between good and evil necessarily, they are, again, not absolutist, not every Eastern religion is like this, but Eastern religions tend to have a little bit more of the two sides coexist, like you said, the yin and the yang, and it's one side isn't all good and one side isn't all evil. They're just, you know, opposite ends of a spectrum or whatever. Whereas a bit more in the Western religion tradition, you do get that kind of like, evil is evil and must be eradicated. And I think Lucas kind of lifted the very shallow idea of some of the Eastern traditions without fully understanding them enough to do them proper justice, and tried to mesh them onto his Western ideas a little too much. And I think that kind of has left the series with lasting problems. Because, as you just said, most of us who were watching the prequels as they came out as either late teens or adults were very excited at the subversive nature of like, oh, he was prophesied to bring balance to the Force, and the Jedi thought that meant he was going to be like a super good guy, but really it meant wiping out all the Jedi except two so they would be in perfect balance with the two Sith. Because that's what I thought he was going for.
And same here.
George Lucas did a whole, like, you know, junket tour after episode 3 and was like, no, I don't know why people are thinking that. Like, he didn't ever fulfill the prophecy. He was meant to wipe out all the Sith and have it all be good light side Jedi. And I'm like, but do you realize that the Jedi in the prequels are awful? They're like a government paramilitary organization who kind of works extrajudiciously, and then they're like, extrajudicially, excuse me, and then they're also like stealing children from their families and raising them to not know love or human connection. Like, you realize they're the bad guys, right? Did you realize that when you were writing this? Because it doesn't seem like you did. So yeah, I've had a lot of problems with that since the prequels.
Yeah. So let's turn the question on you. What scene for you would be impactful from New Hope?
Anytime Luke Skywalker is talking about getting out of that backwater little planet.
Oh, gee, I have no idea about that. Yeah.
You've been listening long enough. You knew that was coming. It comes up every girl. Time. Yeah, it comes up every time we've got like a main character talking about wanting to get out of where they are. You know,
it took stormtroopers killing the last remnants of his family to do that, but you know.
Yeah, that's kind of not a thing I want to happen. But there is something. And I was watching the deleted scene at Tashi Station.
Oh, yeah, yeah, where we actually get to meet... Which is up on Disney Plus. We actually get to meet Biggs.
Yeah, we actually get to see Biggs before the end where he's like, oh my god, Biggs! You know? And in the original movie, you're like, who is this guy? But you get to see, you know, Biggs tell Luke, like, hey, I'm gonna go run away and join the Resistance. I don't wanna be drafted by the Empire. I don't believe in what they're doing. And you also know that Luke already has rebellion sympathies.
Yep.
In this scene. And in fact, I'm very sad it's not that some form of that scene never really made it into any of the versions of the movie.
I think it's that where Lucas wanted to introduce Luke. And to introduce him that early in the movie would have probably taken something away.
Yeah, I get that. I get why it didn't. But the thing is that it's such a good character moment that I'm sad there wasn't really a way to work that into the flow. I understand why it didn't, but I really like that moment of Luke where you can see he's still naive. But you see that his heart's in the right place. He sees that there is an evil growing, and he wants to be on the right side of that struggle. But to me, I don't know. I think that there is something to me, and it's just part of, you know, because I didn't get a lot of this growing up. Watching Leia grab that gun and being like, well, this is a shoddy rescue. I guess I'm going to have to take out all the stormtroopers now.
Worst rescue ever. I have to do this myself.
Yeah. I absolutely love that scene because it was one of the few times in my childhood that I really got to see a girl kind of grab the gun and be the action hero.
Yeah.
To kind of
shift it in the parody movie Spaceballs, where Vespa is just gunning people down with no effort.
I also love that scene. Yeah. A great, great scene. But you know, probably the most impactful Star Wars moment, maybe in my entire life, was watching Force Awakens, like, opening night or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire climax of that movie, I was certain that they were going to figure out that they were going to give Finn the lightsaber.
That's kind of what people were thinking of, even based on the trailer.
Yeah, that Finn was going to come out of this the hero. And that would have been great. I mean, you know, Black Guy is the hero of Star Wars. I'm all for it.
Especially someone who worked for the Empire.
Yeah. You know, that would have also been a great story.
Yeah.
But personally, very personally, you see the lightsaber flying through the air and you don't know where it's going. And the second it ended up in Rey's hand, I just, you know, again, I just lost my mind in the theater.
I think there was a collective whoa in my theater when Rey held the lightsaber and turned it on. Like, whoa. Okay, we're in new territory here. Yes, yeah. The Clone Wars shows existed. Yes, there are female Jedis in the books. But not everyone watches the TV shows. Not everyone reads the books. Not everyone plays the video games. Some people just watch the movies, and that's okay.
Yeah. But, you know, seeing that and thinking, like, man, little kid me would have found this the greatest thing in the world.
Imagine if they had continued making Star Wars movies into the 80s and into the early 90s, if Lucas had stepped on making them, and there was a movie. We kind of got a little bit of it in Rise of Skywalker as a flashback, but if you had actually saw Luke training Leia in the ways of the Jedi.
Yeah, and that was the thing is, you know, you said it before. If you were a little girl and you liked Star Wars in the 80s or 90s, you were the princess, we'll come rescue you, go over there. No, you don't get the lightsaber. I get the lightsaber. Princess never gets the lightsaber.
Girls can't be Jedi.
Yeah.
How many times have you heard that in your life?
Yeah, I mean,
Even Rey becoming a Jedi, there were people coming out saying girls can't be Jedi. Well, why not?
Yeah, and it's better now. You know, little kids coming up now, and it's good for girls and boys.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
But, you know, seeing a broader thing, you know, seeing, you know, Latino heroes on screen, seeing black heroes on screen, it's good. I like it. You know, the wider the net, you know, it's just better for me. And I love seeing all those weird and different stories because they're not always exactly what my life is, but I like seeing them, just like I found a lot to relate to in Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a farm boy. I never have been, you know. I grew up near a farm. I guess that's kind of the closest I got to it. But, you know, I don't exactly know all of those emotions or whatever, but I still found a lot to relate to.
Like you said, you grew up in a small town, and that's your big thing of never leaving your small town, and Luke wants to leave this little desert planet he's lived his entire life on.
Yeah, if there is a bright center to the universe, you are on the planet it's farthest from. I have used that exact line to describe where I live when people ask. But I love what Star Wars has become. And in fact, I love what Star Wars kind of always was. Hmm. You know, Rey's not the first badass woman in Star Wars.
No, no.
I wish there had been more than one, you know.
And again,
there's the infamous fan edit that's like every line spoken by a woman who's not Princess Leia in Star Wars, and it's like 3 minutes long. But I like that you still saw kind of a diverse galaxy. You saw women in military leadership. You know, you had like Mon Mothma, you know, leading rebellion things. You had strange looking aliens in positions of power in the rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had people of color in the background. You had, you know, I mean, not except for Lando Calrissian, you didn't really get them in the foreground, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they at least tried to show that in some way the Empire was very rigid and very, you know, one-dimensional. And the Rebellion was better because it had a lot of different people coming together to fight for something they really believed in.
And if you want to talk about, I mean, there's a lot of the... over the last few years, people have complained that they've made Star Wars an SJW fest. And it's like, those things were always there. You just never didn't look at them. The idea of oppression and people fighting for their freedom, that's across in really all 9 movies, if you want to look in that direction.
Yeah.
This is not something that just Disney made up. You want to put, you know, Kathleen Kennedy on a pick because she's just putting more of what's already there. And most of the time, you were either a kid and didn't notice it because you're a kid, or you didn't see... you didn't want to scratch the surface. You just wanted to be presented of, oh, this is a space story, and not look at the deeper meaning behind the decision that George Lucas made. This movie was Lucas's response to the Vietnam War.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to tell you this if you didn't notice, but Star Wars is a movie about fighting space Nazis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, they're called stormtroopers. That's right there, right in front of you.
They're wearing fascist uniforms. They're all white and pure, and it's like, come on.
I was saying before, and like, this is Lucas's. This is the Vietnam War through Lucas's eyes. He was on the side of the Vietnamese. The rebellion of the Vietnamese. The Empire are the Americans.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, all the stuff you liked as a kid, especially if it's science fiction, almost all the stuff you liked as a kid was very political. You know, we've talked about it before. Beauty and the Beast was a gay guy working out his problems with bullies.
Little Mermaid was another gay guy trying to get his feelings for another man in some kind of way to understand it.
And then put to music by that same gay guy I mentioned earlier. I mean, these movies, a lot of the movies that you love, they've always been political. You just missed it. And I'm sorry you did, because they're much better when you don't miss it. They're much better when you get it. Star Wars is a beautiful movie when you understand the underlying themes of it. Last Jedi is an amazing movie when you understand the themes underlying it. I'm sorry, but my favorite part of that movie is the Canto Bight scene where Finn is just looking around and is like, wow, look, slot machines, blinking neon lights. This is great. There's wealth everywhere, and I love it. And Rose says, look again. Look again. There are slave children over there. There are animals being abused. These people are all war profiteers who are making money off of, you know, kids like you being stolen and turned into child soldiers, but they're also at the same time selling weapons to the rebellion. They don't care who wins. They just care that they're here, safe on their little planet, getting rich. Yeah, but that's a good movie! That's a brilliant movie! I love that scene!
And
that
it really opens up. It really opens up Finn's eyes to what the rebellion are fighting for.
Yeah, that's the moment he becomes a hero. Not just a guy who's out for himself, but a dude who's actually a hero.
It's amazing that they gave Finn the Han Solo story.
Yeah, and it's Han Solo in the original movie too, you know? It's like, you don't care about anything but money, and then Han comes back, and he's like, well, I guess I do care about some things other than money.
He's, you know, he sees what the Rebellion are fighting for, and he's kind of all for it. It yeah. almost costs him his life, but he's straight up, you know, it's not even, oh, the princess is hot and she's rich and she can give me some money. It's like, these people are fighting for their freedom, and he wants to help them fight for their freedom.
Yeah, I mean, along the way, he said, I got my reward and now I'm gone. He has no reason to come back other than principle. So if you were cheering Han Solo as a kid for coming back and saving Luke, that was political. Welcome.
That was someone who, like, it's like the same, it's like the person that says, oh, there's bad guys on both sides, or there's good thing to say about both sides. The person that doesn't want to pick a side, and he chooses a side. Because he has to.
And that's the moment we're supposed to cheer. That's the moment the music swells. That's the moment that John Williams is telling you, this guy's a hero now. Yeah.
And then they try to put that with his own movie where he kind of was always a jerk, but he was always a good guy too. No.
Yeah. It does kind of ruin the character arc just a little. But yeah, so I'm sorry if you missed the point of Star Wars. But welcome, now that it's a little more obvious, welcome to the point of Star Wars.
It's just that, you know, if you want to put the blame on Kathleen Kennedy, she was the one that put it more in the forefront to say, here's why I like Star Wars, why don't you like it for this reason?
Yeah. Star Wars.
Yeah, Star
it's
Wars.
It's more than just explosions.
It's more than, you know, explosions and freaky looking aliens.
Yeah.
Though, what else?
I just gotta say, you know, we should probably wrap it up now, but
yeah, there's really nothing
we don't even need, I don't think, to even ask the question. Of course Star Wars is magical.
Yes, definitely.
Of course Star Wars will always be magical. It was magical to the people watching it for the first time in 1977, not knowing what it would become. It is magical to a little kid who watches it now, no matter where they start in the series.
Imagine the kid in 97 who the first Star Wars movie they saw was Phantom Menace. Or the kid now, the first movie they saw was The Force Awakens. Maybe there's a kid who never seen any of the movies, but he saw the Clone Wars cartoon. There's something in Star Wars for everyone. Even people who don't like Star Wars love The Mandalorian.
Yeah. Man. Mandalorian. We're going to have to talk about Mandalorian one day.
Before season two starts, we'll have to talk about Mandalorian.
As the memes say, I am Star Wars now.
The Baby Yoda show. Yeah, I mean, it's May the 4th when you're listening to this, maybe. And since we're really not much doing anything, and all 9 movies of the main series are on Disney Plus, go for it. Watch them in any order you want to. You want to start with episode 4? That's my preference. Go for it. You want to start with Phantom Menace? Go for it. You want to start with Force Awakens? Go for it.
It's your Star Wars. You want to be like Tuesday and start with Return of the Jedi? Go for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I mean, yeah.
Hey, whatever gets you there, you know? Welcome to the fandom if you weren't already there. And if there's somebody in your house that isn't in the fandom, sit them down. Bring them in. They're going to love it. There's something there that they're going to love.
There's something in Star Wars that everyone will love. Maybe it's not the movies. Maybe it's the books. And I know there was a lot of people who were so angry that the books that they grew up reading were now no longer canon. These characters don't exist anymore. I understand that.
Hi, I'm one of those people.
I understand that. But say what you will, they kind of built up Luke to be a character he was never meant to be.
Yeah. And you know what? That's fine too.
True.
If you like that version of Luke, I liked some of that version of Luke.
Luke, with one U or two?
not two. Just plain old original flavor, non-cloned Luke. But you know what? This is still one of my favorite series. I may have come into it slightly later in my childhood. But this is still, you know, like I said, I got misty-eyed thinking about sitting in that theater watching the special editions.
Yeah.
And everything about it is just, it makes me happy. Even when I don't like it, it makes me happy. It's very weird. Like, right now, they're going to release later this month Star Wars Racer on the Switch.
Yeah.
And I am so happy because that was one of my favorite games. I still have Star Wars Racer for the Dreamcast, including my old save files. It all still works. And now I'm going to get to do it all over again with the Switch. And it makes me so happy.
And now, you know this what? Is pod racing.
Yeah, I wouldn't have had that enjoyment. And, you know, all of Greg Proop's silly little lines, which are my favorite part. If it wasn't for a movie that I really don't enjoy that much. You know? So, yeah, even when I don't like Star Wars, I love Star Wars.
And look what it's become. Look at how popular Galaxy's Edge has been at both the Disney parks.
Yeah, and I was planning to go, and then
as was I, for five minutes, me and Kiki actually talked, hey, let's just do a trip and make an episode out of it, and then the world ended.
Yeah,
but you know I mentioned this, okay, true story, and Kiki will back me up on this. I mentioned this to Kiki, like, not long after MarsCon, and she chewed me out because of the whole virus situation.
Yeah, because I think you were still being optimistic, and I am an eternal pessimist. So you were like, hey, you know, we can still make it. We'll see what happens. And I'm like, no, this is about to get very, very bad.
And you were right.
My pessimism has not failed me yet.
Is that going to happen this year?
Yeah, but the point is not to bring things down. Because this is a happy show. We talk about Disney.
Yeah.
But, you know, gather the family around. Have a little Star Wars marathon. If you haven't seen some of the, you know, if you've only watched the main Skywalker movies, try watching Rogue One. There were parts of that I really loved. The ending is amazing.
There's even parts of Solo I liked.
Oh, yeah. Just for Lando Calrissian being amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, Lando Calrissian is... He should just have his own movie now, please. Thank you. This is Cloud City.
This is Cloud City. Cloud City, man. I'm sorry. Yeah. I had to make that reference.
Yeah, no. I don't blame you. But, you know, go watch the cartoons, says the person who has never seen any of the cartoons. Absolutely, go watch The Mandalorian.
Yes, definitely. Like I said, the last season of The Clone Wars, that exclusively for Disney Plus, it's on there. You can watch the entire series if you wanted to. Again, Mandalorian is great, especially, I would say Mandalorian is great for someone who doesn't like Star Wars, because it really is, and it's a Western.
It's bringing Star Wars back to the kind of Western-ish roots that it has, you know?
I'm going to say this, to put it on another Fox property, if you liked Firefly, you'll like The Mandalorian.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah. Go have a nice little Star Wars party. May the Force be with you always.
Yes, the Force will be with you always. And it's for everyone. It doesn't matter who you are or what you are. Star Wars, there is something in Star Wars for everyone. And I hope that even if what we're talking about right now isn't for you, that you find something that is for you. Because the Force is for everyone. And I think that's all we can really say about Star Wars. Because there's nothing we could say about the movies that hasn't already been said.
Yeah.
So, with that said, I'm sorry we didn't get a detailed recap of the movie. You've seen it already. But we have to move on to next week's show. We have a special request. And these special requests are getting out of hand because these are not on Disney Plus.
Our last, like, three special requests have not been on Disney Plus.
But it's a very special request from a very good friend of ours. We are going to be talking about a movie that I really want to talk about. And the reason why we haven't done it yet is because it wasn't on Disney Plus. But because it's a special request, we're going to do it. We are going to be taking a look at The Brave Little Toaster. A great, great movie from the 80s.
And you want to know a secret?
What?
I've never seen this one either.
Oh! You've never seen The Brave Little Toaster?
I've never seen The Brave Little Toaster. Our guests keep finding, like, really cool requests of things that I've never seen before.
Well, we found that you really ended up liking Lilo and Stitch. You actually found something great with Schnookums and Meat. Let's see if you could find something great with The Brave Little Toaster.
Yeah, so join us next Monday when we will have a special guest on to talk about The Brave Little Toaster.
Yes, and for May the 4th, just remember, the Force will be with you always.
Bye! Thank you for listening to Rewatching the Magic. We invite you to keep the magic going by joining the conversation online. Find us on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic, on Twitter at Rewatch the Magic, and of course, find all new episodes at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com. Until next time, remember, the magic is for everyone. It only stops if you let it.